You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
From the Fifth Quarter Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, you're listening to Coach Unplugged. And now, your host, Steve Collins.
Hey, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. So excited you decided to join us today. Before we jump in, I'd like to give a big shout out to our two sponsors. First of all, Dr. Dish, the number one shooting machine on the market. You aren't going to find anything else like it. They are our sponsors because I own three of them, and I truly believe in this machine. I truly believe in the people that work there and the product. Mention Coach Unplugged, and they'll give you $400 off. Just say, Coach Collins sent me. Coach Unplugged sent me, and they'll take really, 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 really good care of you. Trust me. Also, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. 14-day free trial. You're going to want to check it out before prices increase. You know, it's just that things happen. Coach Collins has only got so many hours in a day. Go over and check it out. It's got the roadmap. It's got everything that you need to become a better basketball coach in one stop. You know, if you're looking for clinic videos, if you're looking how to break a 1-3-1, if you're looking how to run a zone offense, if you're looking how to pick an offense, if you're looking for anything, it's got it there for you. As I hit my microphone, oh well. It also helps us pay the bills, helps us keep all these podcasts, the high school hoops and 5-minute basketball coaching podcasts, and funnel down and all these things free to you. Teachhoops.com is what pays the bills and keeps the lights on. So we'd love if you went over and check that out, and let's head off to the podcast.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right, welcome to Coach Unplugged. Coach, we'll try not, but my last, I was talking to a coach from Ireland, you'll have to listen to it, okay. And he broke the record, so we will not go 2+ hours tonight, okay. That's how long him and I went. But I'm going to have you introduce yourself. What I have people do is kind of introduce themselves, so Sean will do that, he'll introduce himself, and then I want you to give like a bio, kind of your synopsis of your coaching career, and then we'll jump into some of the practice planning and some of that other stuff. So let the audience know where you are. I picked up on the Boston accent when we were doing the pre-interview here, but you explain where you came from, kind of where you are now and all that for the audience.
Well, first of all, thanks for, you know, having me on, Steve. I just love, you know, talking basketball. And, you know, my name's Sean Daugherty, and I was born and raised in Worcester, Massachusetts, right outside of Boston. And I kind of grew up there till I was like 31 years old. And I was lucky enough to play Division III basketball at Worcester State College, Division III school in the MASCAC Conference. And I was a point guard there. And then I went on and started my coaching career actually there with the head coach, Tom Moore, who's now at UConn. And then I left Worcester State and ended up going to Assumption College, Division II school in Worcester, Massachusetts. And It was great. I was at Assumption College in the NE10, which is one of the best conferences in the country for Division II. And I was there for 4 years and had, you know, great, got my master's degree in education from there. And then I, you know, applied for a job at Holy Cross College. A guy named Ralph Willey got the job at Holy Cross. And Ralph used to be with Rick Pitino, and he was up, you know, Jim Boeheim, and he coached Pittsburgh. So I applied and I got the job, and I was like the third assistant at Holy Cross. And every year I was there, one of the other assistants left, and I kind of became Ralph's associate head coach after 3 years. And it was great. We won three championships there at Holy Cross and played Kansas, Kentucky, and Marquette in the NCAA tournaments. So it was a great experience. And then I went down to Western Kentucky, and I went with Darren Horn, you know, who was coach of South Carolina for a little while.
Yep.
He was assistant Marquette. He got the job, Darren. So I was with Darren for a while there, and then I decided to take a head job, a head Division III job. So I was with Darren for about less than a year, and a Division III job opened up in the MASCAC at Salem State College, where I played as a player. I played in that Worcester State Conference. So I decided to come back home, come back to Boston. Salem, Mass is right outside of Boston. The Salem Witches there, you know, that's the big thing. And I came back and I was a head Division III coach. And I was that a Division III coach for 4 years. And I loved being my, you know, I was my own boss. And it was first time I ever became the head coach. And we had a great, we won four championships there. And I had a great, you know, success there, that's for sure. Like, you know, over 100 wins. And it was just fun. And then my old college coach ended up getting a job at Quinnipiac University, and he called me up and he's like, "Hey, I want you to come."
So where's
with me.
That one? Everything I followed everything up to this point.
Yeah, Quinnipiac is a Division I school in the MASCAC, in the MAC, and it's in Hamden, Connecticut, right beside Yale University, about 10 miles away from Yale.
Okay.
And I'll tell you, when I was recruiting for them, that was the same exact. When I go out to Wisconsin or I go out to anywhere, they'd be like, "Quinna what? Quinna who?"
It almost sounds like a Canadian, like Quinn.
Yeah.
Winnipeg or win. It's like exactly. Almost sounds like Canadian. Yeah. Okay.
They're really well known for hockey right now. They've gone to the Final Four Division I in hockey. And in basketball, we, you know, when we were there, we started off in the NEC, which is like Sacred Heart, Central Connecticut, Robert Morris, LIU.
Yeah.
That was the league. And then we ended up going into the MAC conference, which has Siena, Iona, Manhattan, which is a much bigger conference.
Right.
So, you know, it was a little bit tougher. And then what happened was the new AD came in after 10 years, got rid of us, mm-hmm. and it was kind of a decision maker. It was the first time in my life I've ever been let go.
Right.
And, you know, now I'm like, you know, my 40s, and I'm like, oh, you know, mid-40s.
Oh, crap.
Like,
it's like.
What do you do?
Right.
And, you know, the old assistant who was with me at the time is this head coach at Indiana, Archie Miller. Another guy who was an assistant with me was at Iowa State, William Small, when he was at Western. Okay.
He's dropping some names here. Like, holy
no, but
crap.
I'm like,
yeah.
I'm no, thinking, I'm,
that, that's serious though. They're legit. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was in the same office as Archie. Me and Archie shared an office together, and you know, William was right down the hall with me. We were on the same staff.
Right.
So I was like, do I move my whole family across the country to one of those schools and try and jump on with one of them, or do I, you know, my son's high school, my son was a freshman in high school, and his job, the job opened up there at Hamden Hall. It's a small prep school right here in Hamden where I was coaching for the last 10 years. I was Division I coach at Hamden, Quinnipiac. And I'm like, you know what? Why don't I coach my son for the next couple of years? So instead of jumping back into Division I across the country and moving my family again, I decided, let's coach my son. And I've had a great experience that this is going into my fourth year now. Yeah, I've been with him since freshman year. I've had 3 years now with him at Hamden Hall. It's a small prep school in the NEPSAC.
And who does that prep school play?
We play like Marianapolis, St. Luke's, St. Thomas More. Middlebury. There's a bunch of like small.
And do you do PG or you do?
We don't. It's only high school, but we do reclassification kids. So a lot of kids come to me and want to do their junior year over and leaving a regular public school. They come and they say, "Hey, I'd like to go there and do a reclass year."
Okay.
And so, you know, there's some good and some bad with that. Some people suggest them to go and stay until you graduate, then go to year prep school. Other kids want to reclass when they're freshman or sophomore.
Well, my son's trying to figure out if he needs a gap year too.
Yeah.
It's like, who knows? Like,
It really is different for every kid, I think.
It is. I think it really is. So a couple things. Okay, so first of all, what was it like to play Division III and coach Division III? So that's the first question I have for you.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, playing Division III, I was a, you know, I was a point guard. And, you know, it's funny because when I was in high school, basketball was everything to me. And you know, like it was right. like, and I was like practicing all summer long from 8 a.m. until the lights went out at the park right. at 11 o'clock at yeah. night. And then when I got to college, I thought I could kind of drift and just, you know, I got into the whole, like, you know, I'm a college basketball player, yeah. started meeting girls. Right. Going out. And so yeah. I didn't focus as much as I wish I did on my college preparation. You know, now that I've been a coach for all these, I realized what I did wrong when I was a player. So I was kind of like a backup, you know, point guard yeah. for all those years. And it was fun playing and we had some great experiences and I love my teammates, but I don't think I ever got the best of what I could have been.
And I played D3 too. There's a love for the game you get at D3.
Oh, yeah. That
there's no glory.
No,
like,
no.
I played in my high school gym filled more than my – I mean, it wasn't even close. Yeah. So – because I went to a big high school, it's like we'd have put 2,000-3,000 in, and then I'd go to college, it'd be like we get 400, you know.
Oh, well, that, without a doubt, I was just like, I was the same thing. I was just,
yeah, you play, there's a difference, there's a love of the game. So Holy Cross Patriot League, great league. It's like a mini Ivy, like you know, without you have doubt. Obviously the NASDAQ where my son's going, but then yep. you've got that one, which is a really good league. I think it's the Patriot League's under.
We were, you know, we came into that league when I got there, they did a book, John Feinstein did a book. And
I've read that book. It's a great book. Yeah.
And it's funny. If you ever go into the acknowledgments at the very end, I'm in there and it says, you know, acknowledgement says, and Sean Daugherty in, yes, you too, Sean. You know what I mean? Because yeah. he was always making fun of me. Like I would, hey, you got to put me in the book.
Yeah. It's funny. My son was looking at it for just school. Wasn't the, yeah. I go there, I won't eat. It's like a Colgate and some of those schools. Unbelievable. You got to be a student. Like you don't go to those schools unless you're a student.
I can tell you some stories about some of the recruits we brought in for the academics and bringing them down to the admissions department. It was hysterical. I'll give you a good one. We brought this one kid from New York in and I was like, all right, listen, we're going down to the admissions interview right now. Like you got to be on point here. The admissions lady's no joke. She's going to ask you questions. Like, you know, make sure you understand. I told him all this stuff. And she said, you know, this is the true story. Kid came out. I said, how'd it go? He goes, all right, I thought you go. So I asked the admissions guy, like, what do you think? She goes, well, Sean, I'm not too good. He goes, I asked him what the last book he read, and he said, I don't read books.
Oh my God.
I'm like, Holy Cross. I'm like, well, we can take him off the old recruiting list.
I'll tell you Holy Cross because that was on my son's list. I can tell you they wanted, for the financial aid stuff I needed to fill out, they wanted literally to know what my – great ancestors made and where is that third nickel that you said you had.
Swear to God.
It was more in my son, I think it was like by the time it was done like 18 schools, there were Ivy, little Ivies, the Patriot League. They're in a different class for what they asked for. It's like, are you kidding? What do you want? Like, you want my firstborn child? Like, they were asking for more things than any human being should ever want. I could see how people would give up. Like, I'm not doing this. You're not going
to. It was hard to get in. We had to be real specific with the type of recruit we went after. We used to pre-qualify kids. You know, Ralph was a stickler on making sure that we, you know, we went to Jesuit schools and we pre-qualified kids and made sure they had the SATs and the transcript prior to coming in. And it was a lot of background checking.
The only thing I've thought about is like coaching in the NASDAQ, coaching in the Patriot, coaching in the Ivy is you basically, here's your pool. Like, yeah. you can see a kid in Indiana on a July day, and you go, I can't even look at that kid. Like, your pool is this 10%, maybe 5%, 10.5% that I can even look at these kids. Like, exactly. So I think that in some respects, you're probably all fighting for the same kids.
That's exactly what it was. We were fighting against the Dartmouths and all the time and against the Patriot League and, you know, all the schools and the NEPSAC, you know, NESAC school. So it was
tough. Right. And then what the problem is, the NASDAQs are trying to grab one of yours that you can give a scholarship. They're trying to grab them because they can't give a scholarship. It's like this whole
grab the one above at the Ivy, you know.
Yeah. And you guys are trying to get the Ivy and then the Ivies are trying to grab a Duke kid or or like a Stanford. It's like, oh, I know. Yeah. But it's interesting, I think, in the sense that if you're at Michigan or Michigan State, you basically have the pool of the world. Like,
oh, without a doubt.
Yeah. in your pool.
It was also great because you got to get to coach kids who really got it. You know what I mean? And I loved – that was my 4 years of kind of like really becoming a coach because, first of all, Ralph Willard was phenomenal.
Right.
He was a stickler for the little things, and he was maniacal on – you know, he was a Rick Pitino disciple.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and he kind of like almost taught Rick some of his stuff. So like he was, we, you know, we had early morning, all the things you can imagine. We had early morning individuals at, you know, 6 a.m. And, you know, you had to be there for 5:30 dressed and ready. And, you know, we went through a hard workout and then, you know, late night study hall, you know, just, you name it, we did it. Film and breakdown effort stats. The effort stats were phenomenal. Like breaking down a kid's tape and showing it to him. It's you know, the stuff I learned.
The one thing the Patriot doesn't have that the Ivy, and I've talked to Dave about this, the Ivy is like the kid we were talking about, Chris, he was going to do a Saks Fifth Avenue. I don't know what's happening now. This summer he's doing an internship. There was nothing going on this summer. They shut them down.
That hurt.
Like there's no like individual like it.
No.
So the Patriot League probably isn't quite like that.
Yeah. No, I think the connection is a little bit bigger. When you're an Ivy League kid, you're a little bit different. But I'll tell you, those Patriot League schools, like the Holy Cross guys, they stick together. If you're a Holy Cross alum, there's alums out there that'll give you jobs, and they want to hire Holy Cross guys.
I told my son, I said, the school, you could have gone to a lot of schools, but he's going to Middlebury. I said, once you get through there, you're a Middlebury kid.
Exactly.
So all of a sudden now, other Middlebury people will know you.
Like, exactly. That's, and that's how you're going to get your job down the road. It'll be someone that'll hire him because of that.
Yep. It's the advice I give all my senior athletes. As I said, when you go to college, every day meet a new person. Connect with somebody because you don't ever know which one is going to open that door up. And you, some of your best friends will be that one person in that one class that you just connected with. You never know. All right. So let's jump into the practice stuff, Coach. I'd love to talk about that. So let's have you share the screen here. And we'll jump into practice. Let's do that. Let's do the first one that you were talking about, that PowerPoint. Let's just go through real quick, you know, kind of your summary of practice. Then maybe we can talk about a practice.
Yep. All right. Let me, you want the summary?
Yeah, let's do that one first.
All right. You know, I showed this a couple times out to, you know, some people, and I think it's important. You know, you just got to have a plan of like, when you're running your practice planning.
Yep.
You know, I think there's important things to have. And I think you got, like, first of all, you got to be really organized. You know, I think you got to meet with your staff and go over, you know, your plans each day. And if you don't have a staff, just make sure you have a plan.
And how much time do you spend on a practice plan?
And I probably, you know, I've been doing this for 25 years now. So I probably spend a half an hour. You know what I mean? When I was younger, I probably spent a little bit. When I was first doing my first job at Salem State there, I probably did an hour and a half. But, you know, I send it to my coaches after because they're all teachers. So I send it to them and they look it over, give me a couple things. I go back, edit it and say, oh, yeah, I should have added that in. Good point. So I think that's important to do. I think you have to have that. I think it has to be written. And then I show it to the players. Like when I get there, I post it so they see it, what's going to go on today. So I put it up in the locker room when we get there so they can see what kind of like the practice is.
And is there a specific time that you do it? Like, especially now being a high school coach, do you?
Yeah. We usually have practices, like our kids go to school until 2:50 and then they take a bus over to we have a $10 million practice facility. It's really nice. Three courts, beautiful. It's Beckerman Center.
Okay.
Dave Beckerman, who started the Starter Corporation of the basket, you know, the jacket starter.
Yep.
He had a lot of money. He used to be the coach here for 20 years. And
he built
this facility called the Beckerman Center. So the kids leave the school like 2:50 and they come over to the Beckerman Center. And then I do study hall from 3 to 4 and I just have them stay in a room and, kind of like the lunchroom there, and they just do some study hall. But then that's where I show the practice plan to have it up, and then we go on the court every night from 4 to 6.
Okay.
So 4 to 6 is that time, and that gives the time for the teachers who teach my coach assistants to get there. And
that's the hard part. I know. And then do you do your practice plan for the next day that night, or do you wait till the
I kind of do it the next, you know, next morning and, you know, talk about it. Then I send it to them an email and the email will be back. Or sometimes I'll do it at night. Depends on how it really goes.
I used to do it at night, but I like to dwell on it. I think I dream about it, to be honest with you. I mean, because it's like, oh, that didn't go well. And do you tape your practices?
I started doing that, but then I realized, to be honest with you, I'm the only one watching them and like going over it. And because it used to be like in college, like, you know, we have the other assistants, the kids, the players, and the high school level is like,
it's me. It's the exact same coach.
And I'm like, and to get managers to help out to do it like that, I'd rather have the manager running the clock than running the film up top. And, you know, so it's kind of like, I got away from it. I did start doing that, but I
You
got to
get one of the automated recorder things like VO.
Yeah, I know. Those are expensive.
They are expensive.
Into that.
Yeah,
do that?
I do. We just got one about a year or two ago. And it's really nice. It's like, and the thing is what I'll do is I won't watch the whole practice, but it's like, I'll be home, I'll eat dinner. And then I'll start thinking about like, oh crud, we didn't do that very well. So let me go, I'll go back and watch that drill. And you're right. It's 97% probably me and one of my assistants, but I just like it from that standpoint. Or, oh wow, we did really well. Remember that one thing we were working on? Let's go back and look at that. What was that doing? That's right. Where it's nice to have it. It's not like I'm throwing the ball or kicking anything at him. There's nothing I'm in there that's going to get me in trouble.
Exactly. Yeah. I wouldn't worry about that. I have all my practices open to my parents. I encourage every parent to come to every practice.
And do your kids tend to be local?
Yeah. They're all within a half an hour distance because it's a day school only. They don't have
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, so it's all, you know, there's no overnight kids, so it's all commuting. So
okay, it's all
parents
commuting.
Coming to pick them up. And I just always thought, like, a parent's there, like, why are they sitting in the car waiting? I said, please, just come in and watch the last half an hour. I want to watch my kid play ball for a little while. So right. I have my kids' parents come in all the time and sit in stands. I just tell them, make sure they don't go crazy, you know, and be loud.
Right.
You know?
Don't yell at them, yeah.
But,
okay, let's keep going.
I talk about like making sure my staff all have a firm understanding of the plays and the drills that we're going to cover. I think that's important. Like a lot of times I shouldn't be the only one who knows what the drill is about. So that's why I send it to the coaches early and say, hey, if you don't know the drill, let me know and we'll go over it.
Right.
I don't want, when you come in early, you know, like we'll talk about it during study hall. So you kind of understand because I might like have to do something. They have to run it. I don't want to be embarrassed by, my staff not knowing.
Right.
And it shows that everybody's on the same page.
Yep.
I think that's important. Okay. I think the warm-ups are important. Like nowadays the kids back in our day, used to be right over left, arm across. All right, let's go play ball.
Right.
Today, I think you got to give the kids a little bit more dynamic warm-up. They used to like some plyometrics, so I'm having a routine. And that's one thing we did when I was at the end of my years at Quinnipiac. We had the Navy SEALs come in and do a SEAL training program.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was a three-day program, and I'll tell you, it was unbelievable, accountability and leadership. And if anybody could have a chance to have a part of that or watch that on film or whatever, you really should because if you're a coach, they just talk about leadership and the dynamics of it. And one of their big things was the warm-up and how they have one leader and he would, he'd say, all right, knees to chest, to half court and back, ready. And then the whole group in a line would have to say ready. And then he'd say attack. And then they say attack. And it looked just so good. They were all on the same page. The leader stepped up, told them what the drill was. They all went out and they went to half court and they came back. And then the leader get up and he'd say, all right, next one, butt kicks. Ready? And they all yell, ready. And they, if the one kid wasn't saying ready, you went down there and you ripped into him because you got to be part of the group.
Right.
You're following the leader. And, I was all about that. And I'll tell you, like, the kids loved it. They did this 8-minute dynamic warm-ups, all the different ones. And it was great. I think the kids really enjoyed it. So I think that's important. And I said, running the clock is important. If you have a clock in your gym, you should have that and keep the drills short. Like too many coaches, I go watch a lot of practices and they'll be like, all right, 9 minutes of this. And the kids are like, after minute two, they're like, done.
No. So here's what I tell people when I go out and talk too. It's like, we live in a Snapchat world, people. TikToks, the longest a TikTok is a minute and most of them are 15 seconds. So if you think you're keeping their attention for 9 to 10 minutes, you're not.
That's all that UB Brown practice stuff. Yeah. I love watching. I watch UB Brown a couple times. Anybody get a chance to watch UB Brown on talking about practice? He is phenomenal. Talking like off the charts. Like he says, make sure you come in with a cue card. Make sure every drill is 3 to 5 minutes. He's right on point.
I love that. I do. Hubie's got some great stuff. I agree.
Oh my God, he's like, man, talk about a genius of basketball back in the day. Obviously I think you have your practices start early, you're longer early in the year and then taper them down to make sure to taper it down.
Yeah.
And then,
down to an hour 15 and is that total an hour 15
at the very
cutting film?
That is when they came in and, at the end of my practice, late February, cause I hate to say it, but I'd only play like probably 8-9 guys. I didn't want to get him hurt. So I thought an hour and 15 minutes was good enough. And we, you know, we keep it simple and we go through it. And, you know, I started early on, it would be two and a half hours, but then by the end, it's an hour and 15. I'll tell you right now, when I was at Quinnipiac, same thing, hour and 15, hour and a half at the most in late February. At Holy Cross, Ralph Willard, hour and 15, hour and a half. So a lot of Division I guys doing the same thing. They taper it down. It was 3 hours to start, and by the end, they were doing an hour 15, an hour and a half.
I love that. I do that too. I love that.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, you got to know that practice is where you create new winning culture. You know, so I think you have to have accountability for all segments, winners and losers. As much as you can do winners, kids love that. I mean, I don't care what drill you're doing. If you can get a winners and losers, kids love busting on their teammates. That was the fun part of it. When I played. Yeah, like, yo, get on the line. You know what I mean? Leaders got you. And then, you know, like.
It doesn't matter. From someone that's done this a long time, it doesn't matter what you're doing. Like,
no, it really doesn't.
It doesn't matter. And the thing is, sometimes it depends on part of the season, too. Early in the season, you might run. Late in the season, you might do 5 burpees. Exactly. I'll do, like, if they're doing a contest versus another player, I'll say you have to do 5 burpees. And you have to say 3 nice things about the person you beat. Or beat, you know, lost to, you know, and it's like, you have nice hair, you know, like whatever, but it's just like, they'll laugh and then they're doing it, but they don't want to do that. Like, you know, so it's kind of a losing thing.
I tell you, so I think that's a huge thing. And I think pushing your effort stats, like I'm a big believer. When we were at Holy Cross, we did this thing called effort stats. I could show
and what are, so you called. Talked about that before we came on the air. Like, give me some examples of effort stats.
Let me see if I can pull it up right.
Okay.
I have right. Yeah. Let me see. Can you?
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah. So now, like, what we would do is, when I was at Holy Cross, one of the big things, effort stats were huge, and we would break down a game film at the end of the game. So what we do is we take this right here, this form, and it would say, all right, we'd watch the first segment of the game, first play of the game. And I'd be like, okay, here we go. First shot goes up. Stop. Pause. Did Gio block out? No, Gio didn't block out. He got a 0. All right. Did Danny block out? He did. Rewind it. Wait a minute. Yeah, he did. He checked the kid. He got him. He got a 1. All the way down to the 5 guys in the game, if they had a chance to block out, did they or didn't they? And then it would be 0-1. And then you go to the next possession where there was a ball loose or a ball got away. That's a ball pursuit. If you ever saw that while you're breaking down the film and you saw a ball being loose or whatever, did your guy pursue it or did he kind of just let someone else go get it?
And how many of those how many ball pursuits do you see in a game?
That, you know, I'll tell you, when you start looking for them, there's a lot more than you can, because you could say to a kid, you could have went for that, but you didn't. And, like, no one else would pick up on it, but when you're watching it in film, you see 2 guys standing beside each other, and then one kid reacted to it, and the other kid kind of just stood, and, you know, and then when he saw the other kid went for it, he just kind of got in a defensive stance. So that would be a 0 for ball pursuit.
I think if you do that early in the season, that can be the difference between winning and losing.
Without a doubt. You know, that's diving on loose balls, all that. And then the shot contest, we talked about, like, Ralph did this study when he was with Brick in the NBA about balls, ball side shot contest. He used to talk about a shot contest in the middle of the face, it doesn't really affect the shot as much. But when you do a ball side shot contest right where the shooter's hand is and going on the ball side, the kid has to usually move his hand just a little bit to the right or a little bit to the left. And that affects his shooting percentage at least 10%.
So are you talking same side hand?
Same side hand.
Because I'm telling you, I just read an article, I don't know, somewhere halfway through the, like, if it's a right-handed shooter and you close out with your left hand, it drops like 15%. It's crazy. Like, yeah. It is something in the last couple of years we've really started to work on. The stats doesn't lie about it. I'm telling you.
Yeah, like ball side. Just making sure, like, my thing was just making sure he's on the ball side. Whatever hand you get up there, just get it on that ball side. So the kid has to think about moving the ball a little bit and angling his arms. I love that. So we used to chart that 0-1, 0-1. Right. And I'll tell you, that would even get kids who normally just, you know, there's a lot of kids who just run out there and close out, don't even put their hand up. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know? So if you charted that, you know, and then you'll see at the end what happens. And then the only thing you do on the offensive end is offensive rebounding attempts. So, like, when we go down to the offensive side, I'd be like, all right, don't worry about the, whatever. When the shot goes up, did you go? Did Gio go for an offensive rebound? Did Danny go for an offensive rebound? And if one of them had offensive responsibility, I mean, defensive responsibility, like the top guy getting back, did he get back? Did he say, I got back, I got back? If he didn't, he got a zero. If he did, he gets a one.
You know, right, because you don't necessarily want to crash five at all times.
No, but no, we always crash four.
Okay, okay.
And that when we were at Holy – when I was at Quinnipiac, we crashed four. And I'll tell you right now, we were the number one rebounding team in the country in 2013 to 14, and we were number one offensive rebounding team in the country for seven straight years at Quinnipiac over Duke, Kentucky, Michigan. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Because you're charting it. Whatever you chart, they're going to do. Whatever you
exactly.
Chart, yeah.
and then we did charted charges. And obviously, if you had a chance to take it, you didn't. If you did it,
okay,
you got one.
Yep.
Deflections were always huge. We try to get 40 or higher deflections.
And what you don't do zeros for deflections. You just do one.
No. Just if you got one.
Okay.
You know, because it's tough to do a zero. So just deflections. And we always say, but 40 is our number you have to reach. If you don't get 40, we run. You know what I mean? So, like, kids with hands – and Ralph was always about keeping your hands up. He said hands down, like, you know, like you don't get a chance to get a ball, deflection. Yeah.
Hands down, man, down, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
You know, all that. So I was a big believer in hands up on deflections. And then closeouts and rotations, I added in – we didn't chart that when I was Holy Cross, but I added that when I was at Salem State because I just –
And what do you mean by closeout rotations? Whether the ball gets skipped and you can get a closeout?
Yeah, like you can tell in a defensive possession, like when a ball gets skipped, did your man do a horrible closeout? You know, did he just sprint out there, the kid blew by him?
Right.
All right, well, that's a zero. You know what I mean?
Right.
But if he shuffled his feet, he controlled the guy, and he still got beat, I'd give him a one because he did a good closeout, but the kid scored.
That's a hard thing for a high school kid to do effectively is that second rotation. It's – the burn by is like, oh my God. It's like, they have no, I don't know if it's because of like newborn giraffe and they don't know how their bodies work, but geez, it's like, you're running out there. Like your house is on fire. They're going to go around you. Like
exactly.
Yeah.
And then we do the rotations where we're basically, if you're two passes away, were you at the dotted line, the old, you know, in a center line, like hand on a line, seeing both mall and man, and that's a 0-1. So, but you know, then we put all this together. And at the end, like, you know, I'm looking at it like Gio, I did for one for Gio. He was 23 for 39.
Okay.
He had 58%. And our goal is if you're 70 or below, you run a sprint in practice to start the practice below 70%.
Okay.
So right now Gio would start practice with 12 sprints. You know what I mean? So he'd go and just go. He'd see his effort stats, and he'd be like, I got to go do 12 sprints. Timed. They all have to be timed. You know what I mean?
Right.
And, you know, he would do it. So now he's pissed off because he's like, man, I got below 70. Like, you know what I mean? And then at the end, if we didn't get 40 deflections as a team, we'd have to run as a team for those 40 deflections.
And what percentage of those players usually got above 70? And do you do 70 for your high school kids?
No, I do. I do 60 for my high school kids.
Okay.
You know, to be honest with you, you know, and I don't as much, I haven't like, cause it's a little bit harder with the high school kids to hold them as much accountable in this. I show them this, but we don't just run as much. If something was blatant and early on, I do, but I didn't do this as much the whole year.
Okay.
Cause you know, it's a different, you know, the prep school level, it's just a different
one. It's a hard, this would be a hard thing to do for every game, but
you
could do it early. I mean,
early on, I do it my first five games.
That would be my advice. The coaches that are listening. Cause I'll try to get a copy of this, but that would be my advice is do it early. You set the tone early because,
I'll tell you right now, we did this at Holy Cross. This is no lie. It was the second game or third game of the year. And the kids at the end, you had to be above 70%, all that. We came in and coach read these effort stats off, and we lost the game by about 15. And he said, okay, everybody come on to get on the line. We were down in the recreational facility because of the main play. I'll never forget it. We had to do 138 sprints as a team. 138 sprints. And I'm telling you right now, they were all timed. And if you didn't make it, we went again. It was like 2 hours of running. I'll never forget the next game. Guys were screaming at each other. Shot contest on the ball side. What are you doing? I am not running tomorrow. Like, because by the way, we were running at 6 a.m. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like 6 a.m.
Right.
So like these guys had to get up at 5:30, and then they had to do 138 sprints, and then we had practice later. You know what I mean? Like,
and they had to go to not an easy class. Yeah.
Yeah, and I'll tell you right now, but I saw the mentality change of worrying about their offense, worrying about shot select, you know, all that. What they were worried about were blockouts, shot contest, ball pursuits. They started where, and all of a sudden, win. We became the number one field goal percentage team in the country at 36%. Holy Cross. We played Kentucky in the first round of the NCAA tournament, and Tyshawn Prince hit a half court shot that basically we lost 72-68. But we were 16 seed, they were one seed, and I'll tell you, the kids were like doing just the effort stats. It was amazing. Right.
It's awesome.
I've seen it work.
That's awesome. Let's go back to that summary thing, and then I want to shoot some questions at you too.
So I think those are important. The efforts that then you always got to teach and practice the great teammate stuff. When guy takes a dive, making sure your team's running the hole for him, they take a chance. Teach him the teammate. Like, that's something I learned from Coach Moore and a couple other guys, Darren Horn. He was just all, they're all about, like, when they do a hustle play, make sure you get excited as a coach.
Right. And
your team gets excited, because they, you want to see them, like, positive reinforcement, like, do that again. And you want to see the team, the kid who didn't do it, say, hey, man, I better start doing that.
Right. Right.
So I think those are the teammate stuff, and we all know what that is, up and down on the bench, high fives to your team, emotion at the right time, like when a good play, there better be emotion for the right time, not for the wrong things.
Right.
Handling winning correctly, dealing with losing correctly, those are two big components I think are important. I think the discipline, you're always going to have individual and team discipline. So how are you handling that? Like, what are you doing? Like, we do 11s, we do 31s. Like, that's 11 is up and back in 11 seconds. 31 is a suicide. I give him 31 seconds to get it done. A 17 is from the sideline to sideline. You got a minute and 10 seconds. You got to get 17 of them done in a minute and 10. And it kind of works out. You got to be really busting to get it done.
Yeah.
17. So, how you handle your discipline when you guys do burpees, like 25 burpees, wall sits.
Are you holding them accountable is what I would tell the young, especially the younger coaches. It's like, it doesn't matter what you make them do.
Exactly.
It's just, they got to know that you did this, you do this, we're moving on.
We're moving on now. Yeah, we got it. And you're going to always come across it.
Yeah.
And then, I think to teach the group mental toughness is the huge thing about that. Who show the leaders.
I think that's huge too.
Toughness is, great. If you have a
great book,
talk about, that's about the little things. And, I think though that's huge.
That's Duke.
And, yeah. Energy and enthusiasm is a huge part of the winning habits, making sure your staff brings it. If you don't have that, fire the guy. It's not worth having around.
No. And the thing is, it's hard too, because sometimes I got to be picked up. I had a long day. I had a parent call. I had 85,000 tests to grade, blah, blah, blah. And I'm walking into practice and I'm only at 80. You got to have somebody that's going to pick you. Let's go. Like, it's really hard every day, but
I'll tell you, when I was always the younger guy in most of the programs, but even when I was at Quinnipiac, I was a little bit older and I had to try and be that guy all the time.
Right.
I was working for like an older guy, Ralph Willard, Tom Moore.
Right.
To give my worth, it was like, I wasn't like, this ex NBA player or whatever.
Right.
I was like, I had to be that energy guy. You know what I mean? And I'll tell you, it can be embarrassing at times, but you got to be like that all the time. So the guys believe in you, like, man, like, this guy's always bringing it. You know what I
right.
mean?
And they can feed off it. It's like when they start clapping, there's an energy that just comes with it. You can't, you can fake that a little bit. Yes.
And that translates every day into like your games. Like, I've seen it happen. Team energy, if you do that every day, your team's going to have energy on the court. Cause you can say, hey guys, we've been doing this every day, and that's something you can hold your hat on. And then I think finally, you got to mirror what you do in practice.
Right.
Style of play. You know what I mean? If you're an up-tempo team, make sure you're working on that stuff, the pressing, you got to work on all those things.
If you want to be fast-paced, you better work on fast-paced. Seems simple, but people forget it. Go down and click on that. We'll go to one of your practice plans in a second. Go down to the game planning one.
Sure.
So is there anything specific you do for like game planning and practice planning and things like that? How much time do you spend on scouts and stuff like that?
I had a taper. When I was at Division One, it was
your life.
That was life. I'd watch probably, 8-7 game films of the opponent, and then breaking them down, each one of them to, breaking out all the plays, breaking out all the defenses. By the time I was done with one film, I probably watched it 100 times. You know what I mean? And then I got to go to the next game film and the next game film and the next game film. So that's all we kind of did at the college level. But at the high school level, I know, like you said, the TikTok world, these kids, it's going to be a short snippet. So I'd give like 3 or 4 clips of each player they're going to be playing against.
Okay.
Their top 5 or 6 players. And then their general offense, I'd watch maybe 3 or 4 minutes of their plays.
Okay.
And I'd show them about two or three minutes of either a man or in zone, just so they got a feel for them. And that's it. So it was really, I don't know, maybe 8-9 minutes. And I talked to them. I show them a scout report. You know, this one's a little bit – I was at Division II when I showed this. But the high school one's very similar, just like this, same exact thing. You have the kid's name. There'd be a picture. I took the pictures out for this, but there'd be a picture beside it. You know, the kid's name, what he did, how much he averaged, you know, what he, you know, basically what he did.
So for individuals, you're looking for tendencies.
Exactly.
Okay.
Now, this kid's a shooter, you know, it always says at the end, like the keys contain, you know, for drives, you know, stay between him and the basket. That was, and then I quiz the kids before the game. Like I go, all right, I always have a board. And I have the box, five boxes, five starters. And I'd be like, all right, number four, Smith, you know, and then the other point guard, that's his point guard for that team.
Right.
I, you know, my point guard, I said, tell me about him. You know what I mean? And he'd be like, oh, coach, you got short clothes on him. He's a lefty. You know that? I'm like, good job. And if the kid didn't, I'd be like, someone else know?
I said,
you know, like, and that would embarrass the kid enough the next game that he'd know. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
right. Because it's really about I'm convinced high school is a lot about matchups. It's a lot about, like, it's, you know.
Without a doubt. You know that,
this kid's got – because most of them have some weaknesses.
Every one of them.
Yeah.
They all do, to be honest with you. There's not too many you don't.
Right.
So that's what we do. We do the offense characteristics, game plan, and all that, and, you know, the keys to the game. And then I'd have this basically scout report kind of like condensed on my board before pregame up on the board. And
what do you do on your board in the pregame? That's a great question. I haven't asked me.
I put up this right here, this one. I don't know if this is going to come up. There you go. Circle of opportunity.
Okay.
And I have basically five starters up on the board for them and then a couple of their subs. And I write notes about them, you know, like each guy.
Yep.
So I first talk about, all right, here's the five starters. Let's go over it, guys. You know, blah, 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 blah. And I say, okay, what does this team like to do offensively? They tell me. I'd be writing it down. Defensively, what do they play? Man, zone. They say it. I'm like, okay, now let's go over on our side. What's going to help us win this game? And I circle opportunity, coach. I'm like, all right, let's talk about that. Like, what's going to help us win? The ball pursuits. How many deflections do we need in this game? 40, coach. 40, coach. All right, we all going. How many guys are going to the glass? Three going to the glass, two back. All right, this game we're sending four because, they, you know, we can afford to send four. You know, they'd all know at that point, you know.
Point. Are we
going to shock and test, blockouts, charges? How many charges are we going to get today? Someone going to get me a charge? I joke around. Get me one or two. You know what I mean?
Like, right.
You know, we're going to get five today, coach. You know, I try to get him into it. And then we leave one blank because I, like, each game there might be something more specific, like a, you know, closeout or, you know, rotations are important this game. You know, so I'd write that in myself. And
right.
Then I put down my keys of, like, today, you know, like, a, you know, whatever the key mantra is today. You know,
okay. I love that. Keys. And again, how long do you normally talk in pregame?
Probably about 15 minutes. You know, 15 minutes. So I, you know, get them, you know, they go out there, they stretch, they do a little bit of warm up. They come in for about 15 minutes. I go over to them. Then they go back out for the next, they usually go back out there for 20, with about 25 or 35 left in the clock. They go out there with, and then they come back in at 7 to get their hype going. They do the old, you know, huddle hype, you know, like coming in, and, you know, getting their bouncing going for about 30 seconds and then back out for the last 4 or 5 minutes.
So all right, so good. You can take that off. Is there anything else you want to talk about the practice planning?
No, I mean, I just think, you know, just the monthly ones, just, you know, like everybody has their own monthly plan, but I think that's important to have.
You got to map it out. Grab one of your practices. Let's look at that real quick, and then I have a couple other questions.
Sure.
So, this is perfect.
I can go to this one. That's fine. Yeah. This is one I used before, so.
Okay, it doesn't matter. So tell me how you break a practice down.
You know, we start with the, you know, the stretching, like we talked about, the dynamic stretch in the beginning, you know, the, you know, we did, you know, proper form, you know what I mean? We were talking about, cause guys weren't doing proper form in the last one. So we do 8 minutes of like that. We did started off the practice with running cause the locker rooms were a mess.
God, that must be universal. That must be universal.
So in this practice, we, you know, everybody got a line because, you know, they, and then, you know, we went in and we picked it up and, you know, came back out and then we started the stretching. So we kind of had to start it with a little bit of negative, but yet then that never happened again.
Right.
So, you know, that was
– you fix it real quick.
Yeah. And then we do a dynamic drill that, you know, like I think gets guys going, and we do this thing called 4-minute shooting. And it's like three basketballs and it's at the elbows don't know if you can see this, but
here, let's stop sharing your screen for a second. We'll come back to this.
Yeah. So basically, the entire team would be out there, and it'd be two lines, one side and the other side from the elbows, just like this.
Yep.
And you know, so it'd be just like that, like that. And they have three basketballs, 1, 2, 3, on this side.
Okay.
And they'd start, this line would come to the middle, and they'd pass it to them. They'd take the shot.
Okay.
All right. And then they'd switch lines, just like that. And then the next ball would pass to the next guy coming in from the side. And they'd pass it back to the same side. The ball would go back to the same side.
Okay.
So it would always be getting passed from this side to that side.
Yep.
All right, for 1 minute. So for 1 minute, they'd be shooting, you know, this line would be the shooting line. This line would be a pass line for 1 minute. Okay. And they'd be shooting kind of like a free throw line jumper. A little bit over to the left, a little bit to the right. Just getting touches, quick passes. And when you've got to go offensive rebound, go get your rebound and then call a guy in the line's name out. You know, Billy.
And then you go back to your same line then.
No, you go to the opposite line. Okay. So you get, you know, the other guy, you know, when you pass it, you know what I mean?
Yep.
You get the offensive rebound. You get your offensive rebound. You pass it to the guy. Yep. Then you get to that end of the line.
End of that line. Okay.
And then the other guy who pass it to you, you know, would go to the end of this line. You know what I mean? And they just keep on switching lines like that for 1 minute with three basketballs going. So, you know, and then you have the manager keeping a track of how many makes, you know, like that. So you'd be yelling. And your focus as a coach is making sure guys grab a rebound and talk and call the guy's name out and pivot on their foot and not travel and run with the basketball on the court. And, you know, balls getting whipped everywhere. Call a guy's name out at the end of the line. Guy's hands are ready. Throw it to him. Get it in there. So we'll be doing that for about a minute. And then everybody would be aware because you have 4 minutes on the clock and it's running down. And then at three minutes, everybody switch. And all of a sudden, this line would move down to the block. This line would stay same spot, just like that.
Okay.
And this guy's would be down in the block area, right above the block. Not inside, but it'd be above the block right there. You make the pass from here to them. And then you have to make like a backboard jump, quick backboard jump. And you'd be surprised how many misses guys make right from the block off the backboard. Quick.
It's horrible.
You know, it was quick passes. Next guy, hands up, ready, shot. Hands up. And then you'd be counting the misses from the block. 7, 8. Come on, man. Focus. Let's go. Focus. And a bet it's going quick.
Yep.
Then all of a sudden, a minute would go down. They're still keeping track of the score. You know what I mean? You're going right now. Now you're at like 50, 60, 70, 71, 72. Now it's a minute, another one. Switch. Now the lines go back. Now the balls go over on this side, and they switch to the other direction.
Yep.
Now we're going the other direction for minute three. You know, going. And then switch, minute four. This line moves down to the block, and they go for a minute here.
Okay.
And they got to get to 145. That's the minimum. And you can start changing the goal. It might be 150.
Do they get 145 early in the season?
No. And then we'd make them run, like, you know, to be honest with you. At first, I'd let them learn the drill, and then I'd be, all right, you know, what's our minimum? And, you know, your minimum might be, depending on how good a shooting team you are, might be 112, 115.
Right.
Like, you do it two or three times without, not telling them what they – then you say, all right, listen, three times we've done it, we've gotten 115 and 118. Our goal is I'm not going below 115. So if we go below 115 – we're running a sprint for everyone below 115.
Okay.
You know, and then all of a sudden for the whole rest of the year, there's your standard. 115 is your standard.
Right.
And then as a coach, now they start killing it every time you get them going. They're like, all right, I'm moving it up to 120, guys. And you start raising the bat level. When we were at Holy Cross, at Quinnipiac, we were doing 160.
Okay. You know, and do you do different shots or you do only those four steps? You ever do
we three? Do those four quick. It's about ball movement. It's not about really the shots. It's about talking. Communicate, quick passes, hands ready, getting their minds into, like, if you're not awake and you're not – and everybody at the end of the line has to be clapping. If you don't have a ball, you got to clap. So if you're not into it, like, you might get a ball off the head. You might get – you know what I mean? Like, you're not ready. The coach is screaming at you. Get your hands up, ready. Shot ready. Turn, you know. So now, like, it's just a drill to get everyone into practice right away. Simple drill, quick shooting, four-minute time with a goal. Everybody's going. You know what I mean?
I love that. I love that.
Yeah, 4 minute shoot. I kind of like it. And, you know, we've always, that it gets our practices really.
And it gets it moving. Hey, everybody. Hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you subscribe, like, jump up and down, review, do whatever you got to do. Also, go over and check out teachhoops.com for coaches who want to get better. Have a great
Sports Social Podcast Network. If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.